if you are guilty of spending more money than you have. I am lucky enough to have been brought up by a grandmother who says live within your means and rather starve, or at least eat, sandwiches with some tea over the last couple of days before payday than actually get yourself into unnecessary debt. Professor Stephen Burgess is Professor of Marketing and Research Director in the Graduate School of Business Administration at the University of Witwatersrand, and is here to help us understand the psychology of spending, particularly spending what we don't have. Stephen, a very good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Great.
Is it all still about keeping up with the Joneses that we're spending more money than we have?
I think the five most expensive words people utter today is, it shows I have arrived. That terminology from people of keeping up with the Joneses and showing people your success through possessions and especially expensive luxury goods, I think damages a tremendous amount of people's futures financially.
Is it because driving a Maserati, for example, or renting or living in a particular part of Cape Town that is the correct address sends a very strong message to family, to friends, to society that Africa Melane now is top dog as far as status is concerned?
Yeah, and you know, it goes much deeper than that. My research has focused over roughly 20 years now into looking at how people think about money and what money's for. And part of that has been developing a theory on why that works. That theory led to an award from the Marketing Science Institute in Boston. And basically what that theory shows is that there's some really deep, complex issues at work here that people can take control over and change.
How do we go about taking control over those things and change them? Because, Stephen, you will know this from your marketing background, that marketers will then tap into that emotional vulnerability, shall we call it, that presenting a particular product or service as a way of indicating to the rest of the of society that I have now arrived, that's what I want to tap into in order for me to go, or in order for a prospective consumer, rather, to go and buy and purchase that product, even if they don't have money to do so.
Well, to just address one issue that might be interpreted what you just said, we're not automatons. People don't put ads on TV or radio or in media, and we are then driven to do whatever they tell us to do. But what advertising does is it triggers us to realize things that we already think or we already feel. And so a lot of what happens with advertising today, I think, there was a motor car advertisement I heard coming in today for a luxury motor car brand saying, you know, buy the car that shows the real you. And so that there are a lot of marketers doing that. But whether or not you fall prey to that would depend a lot on many different factors. One of them is your grandmother, which I had one just like that. And so I knew that you just don't do these things. But a lot of people today are driven to buy products which demonstrate power or prestige precisely because they are insecure about whether they really are that person. And, you know, people react to money in different ways, Africa. They're, you know, people that are secure think autonomously about money to do what I want to do with it. And that may be, in fact, to even exercise behaviors that are driven by Ubuntu. I'll help other people. I'll do this with my money. The opposite of those kind of attitudes toward money are people that feel very anxious about money. And the way that they control their behavior is through anxiety. And related to that is this whole idea of an attitude toward money, that money is there to allow me to demonstrate my power and prestige. That dimension, security versus insecurity, is probably the second most powerful set of attitudes people have toward money. There's another dimension, though, behind this, and that is whether we see that money's there to consume and have quality things and a stimulating environment or whatever, or whether we believe that money's there to be protected and spent only when you can really afford to do so. So when I hear what you said in the opening of this with your grandmother's statement, what I heard her saying was, you save money, you use it carefully, because if you don't, you won't have it when you need it.
So how do we get South Africans to unlearn this notion of I need to spend to show that I've arrived, even if spending requires me to spend more than what I actually have?
You know, I think it's something that's very deep-rooted. And first of all, we must realize that we're in the middle of a South African transformation project. And many people today, it would be natural that they would focus on economic and visible aspects of this because of what apartheid did. But the harm apartheid did was not only economic. It was spiritual. It was social. It was emotional. It did all of these things. And in the middle of us as a country trying to come through this experience, this terrible experience that occurred over so many decades, the world is going through something much bigger than that. So we're talking about often today about the sustainability of companies environmentally. We're talking about equity and what is leading actually to social sustainability in addition to these things. And business today and the products we sell today, you know, we're in a world that's really in a pretty strange place. One, I think people wouldn't have predicted two or three decades ago, and you must just look at what's going on in countries like the United States or the former Soviet Union, et cetera. All of those things impact on what we see, but the media, the technology we see is what really drives this. When I grew up, I grew up and I only came here, almost 40 years ago now. But when I came here, I was a very young man, but I'd still grown up in my teenage years and went to my undergraduate degree in university in the U.S. And in that era, the Beatles and Elvis were like the richest people in the world anybody knew who was kind of lower middle class like I was. So I was stunned when I went to Elvis's house. I had a speech in Memphis and it was actually at Graceland. And the kitchen in Elvis's house was the same as the kitchen in our lower middle class house. The residence that Elvis lived in was not really comparable to my house in Hout Bay at that time. And when you sit and think about those issues and think about what's happened, we expect to live like rock stars when we're actually quite middle management kind of people today. And so a big part of contradicting this is to get people to recognize exactly what they're doing. I had a discussion with our marketing management strategic marketing course recently about exactly this particular question and their own, because, you know, our classes are now at VITS are, I guess, about 95%, 90-95% black African people, I think. I don't count these things, but it looks like that. And so I asked people, I see these people driving in these very expensive Mercedes-Benzes and BMWs and a couple of Porsches and et cetera, and you're asking people, why are you spending money on this? And, you know, I asked somebody, what would happen if you spent 200,000 rands less on that car you just bought? And, you know, you're 30 years old, you put it in the bank, and now you retire when you are you know, 65. What would that be worth to you in today's rands if you just put it away, never touched it, and you got 5% more than the rate of inflation? The answer, by the way, is about 1.4 million. So your money grows about seven times. And you sit down and say, have you thought about that? And the answer is no, I must show that I've arrived.
Which is very unfortunate indeed. Professor Stephen Burgess, that's all we have time for this morning. Thank you very much for your time. Professor Burgess is a professor of marketing and research director in the Graduate School of Business Administration at the University of the Witwatersrand.